You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Stuff recently released a report on sex for rent advertisements for rooms in New Zealand cities, which have been appearing on websites such as Craigslist. The article talks about how the advertisements put women at risk and are a result of the housing crisis. I spoke to Dame Catherine Healy, who is the National Coordinator for the New Zealand Prostitutes Collective and a sex workers' rights activist, about sex for rent arrangements. We talked about the laws around sex work in New Zealand, Stuff's report, and whether sex for rent arrangements are safe. I began by asking Catherine to briefly explain what the laws are around sex around sex work are currently in New Zealand.
Well, New Zealand is unique in the sense that it's decriminalised sex work, so most adult sexual activities that are commercial are allowed for. It used to be that you weren't allowed to offer money for sex, and you know that was repealed. So, I mean, it used to be that you weren't allowed to offer sex for money. So, the situation that we're talking about in terms of rent for sex may have been captured.
Just separate to those laws, and despite legal operations, does this mean that people doing sex work in New Zealand are able to practice safe sex work?
Because sex work is decriminalised in New Zealand, it does mean that sex workers can talk about it quite openly and seek out information without people worrying that, you know, they're in breach of a law or two. So, you know, like in terms of looking at information that exists, we have government-sanctioned occupational safety and health guidelines, for example, that explain about safe, you know, safe practices in the context of commercial sex. So it's not against the law to pay anyone for sex, and it's not against the law to offer sex for money, which is, you know, it used to be the situation that it was against the law to offer sex for money. And it's never been against the law in this country to pay anyone for sex. However, if someone is under the age of 18, you're not allowed to offer money for sex.
So Stuff has just released an expose on sex for rent advertisements placing women at risk. Have you read this?
Yes, I have. I'm familiar.
And what was your response to it?
Well, I think a couple of things, really. I think, you know, like when people see this sort of thing, they worry a lot about vulnerabilities, and certainly that is a concern that people would be in a living situation, and that the boundaries may not be as clear as they need to be. I mean, with sex workers are particularly good at declaring boundaries, and clients also are good at observing those boundaries typically. But this is a kind of murkier situation, you know, like I think, and sex, you know, commands a value for sure. You know, there are things that people do in exchange for sex. So, you know, if you were living day in, day out somewhere and there was an expectation that you provide sex, well, you know, if you're a sex worker, you'd put a dollar value on that, and very quickly you would own the house you were living in, because you would be totaling up the amount of times you would be providing sex. And if it was a lot, you'd soon accrue a tremendous amount of value. And so, you know, but I suspect in these sorts of situations, sex work isn't what is going through people's minds. You know, they're not thinking, oh, I could be a sex worker in this situation. They probably... people who are ill-prepared to negotiate clearly sexual activities and, you know, in return for a roof, a hearth, you know, a home. So it is problematic, you know, and I think it's certainly, you know, some of the commentators have highlighted the vulnerabilities, you know, if people are unable to declare what they're doing because there might be an attachment, you know, there might be stigma attached to it, and they might feel somewhat ashamed or unable to declare that that's the arrangement.
Well, I was also thinking, and it was mentioned in the article, that it's, I suppose it is, it's different to doing sex work, because I feel like usually if you are, if that's your job and that's what you're making a living from, you are, and you've got the power. Whereas if you're living under somebody else's roof, and that's sort of a contractual agreement, I feel like maybe is there going to be issues with the power position between a landlord and a tenant that may not necessarily come up in other similar transactions, I suppose.
Indeed, I think, you know, the power imbalance would be pronounced. You know, like you're vulnerable to put up, shut up, or get out, you know, kinds of messages. And, you know, that indeed could be very, very harmful. So, I mean, we would certainly say, look, you know, just go into these sorts of arrangements, but go in with eyes wide open and know that, you know, commercial sex commands a value. And this is, you know, in a certain way, a very close cousin of commercial sex work, and know that very quickly the dollars mount up if you're thinking like that. And so, for example, if you're going into a room situation, the room commands a value normally on the market of $200, well, you know, sex workers command that in one session with a client. So it's feasible that if you came to that agreement, you could say, okay, sex once a week, but don't you dare cross the boundary otherwise.
But when it comes to crossing that boundary as well, is that who's going to be there to protect that person in that situation? Because it is, I suppose, it is something that's happening in the privacy of one's home, and is, you know, is, I suppose, contractual. But even if they do break the contract, who knows? Who's there to support people in those positions if that happens?
That's right. And, you know, definitely I think, you know, there are professionals around to whom people can reach out. You know, it's not against the law to have these sorts of arrangements, and certainly the person who's the tenant isn't in breach of the law. You know, sexual harassment is against the law. So if you feel that the situation tips over into sexual harassment beyond the agreed terms, then, you know, you certainly have a right to reach out, and reach out anyway. I mean, don't put up and shut up. You know, get professional support. I mean, our organisation is certainly there as well. But yeah, it's complicated, I guess. And, you know, if the arrangement broke down, I guess there are formal dispute hearings. It's a world of merging issues. You know, there's a commercial transaction here that's been agreed to. So feasibly, I guess you could take it into the disputes tribunal if it broke down, or it tipped one way or the other and it didn't appear to be fair. It can certainly tip over into a breach of one's rights, and yeah, we would caution against it.
I mean, just finally, it seems as though, I'm sure this isn't a new practice, something that is just happening. I'm sure it's been something that's happened forever, but do you think it's increasing? I know the article talks about the housing crisis putting people in these situations more often than it has in the past. Do you think that that's true?
There's no baseline. I mean, poverty's always been an issue, and, you know, like it's difficult. You know, I certainly recall people talking about arrangements they had with landlords going back to the 70s. So, you know, it's not a new issue. It's as old as, as time, really. And I think the difference possibly is that it's a perhaps easier environment to talk about these situations. You know, things need to be talked about openly, and, you know, the taboo era of, you know, keeping things quiet has well and truly gone. I mean, sex work is decriminalised, and that facilitates a discussion of sorts around what's fair and evil.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.